Today is Saturday, the 14th of October 2023, and we are gathered here for the 103rd session on mindfulness for beginners in the English medium. And to our great fortune, we have Venerable Bhante Homagama Dhammakusala Thero, representing Nisarana Forest Monastery, logging into today's session. And I would like to welcome Bhante with great respect for this session today. I would also like to welcome all of you heartily who are joining through Zoom and also through the live stream over Facebook. Our program will commence with an in-session practice guided by Bhante, and then we will move on to the talk on mindfulness based on inner chatter and turmoil, continuation from last week, the second chapter of the talk, and then we will move on to the question and answer session where we present written and verbal questions, and then we will wrap up the program. So, for all our benefit, I would like to invite Bhante to commence with the in-session practice. So, to Bhante, much merits.
Thanks, Namanta. Hello, everyone. So, today we'll start our program with a mindful walking practice. I think last week we did a sitting session, so we can do a walking session today. For this, you need to find some space where you can walk comfortably. Maybe some space where you can walk 10-15 steps would be enough. When you find this space, just walk in a comfortable manner and pay attention. Notice that you are walking. Try to be present with the walking. Initially, it might be difficult. Initially, your mind might wander, but with time, you may start to notice that your body is walking. You may feel bodily sensations related to walking. Maybe the texture of the ground you may feel. Which parts of your feet is touching the ground you may feel. Whether it's the heel or the toes that are touching, you may feel. So try to walk in a comfortable manner and notice these details. It's natural that your mind might go away, wandering about things, hearing sounds, and maybe storytelling based on the things you see. This process is natural. Again and again, your mind goes away to various things, storytelling. That's natural. But the practitioner tries to be present among these things. Although the mind wander, you come back to the walking process again and again. Try to notice how the walking body feels. Try to keep few mindful steps. Again and again, the mind wanders. That's fine. We try to be conscious of this wandering process. And we try to come to the walking body again and again. So let's, as a group, try to practice mindful walking for 10-15 minutes. Okay, everyone, now you can return back to your seats. So that's probably like 15-20 minutes of mindful walking, just to give you an idea, so you can practice on your own. With that, Namanta, you can take over.
Much merits to Bhante for guiding us through the in-session practice. Next, I would like to invite Bhante again to commence the talk on mindfulness based on inner chatter and inner turmoil. Over to Bhante again. Much merits.
Okay, everyone. So this topic we started last time. Today also a continuation of the same topic. Now, when we think about inner chatter or inner turmoil, we want to get rid of it. That's our natural reaction to inner chatter. That's our natural reaction to inner turmoil. We don't like to feel it. We want it away. We want to get rid of it. That's how we usually think. And especially when it comes to meditation, we think that with meditation, you can quiet your mind. Some people, they want to one point their mind. Right? So that's the usual idea about meditation. They want to stop their mind. They want to quiet their mind. And a lot of questions are raised if they can't get rid of this inner chatter, if they can't get rid of this inner turmoil. So this is how we want to get rid of this inner turmoil, inner chatter. We want to meditate and get rid of these things. Or some people, they go for drugs to get rid of these things, right? So finding various means to get rid of inner chatter, inner turmoil, right? But the proper practice might suggest that this is natural to your mind. This is how the mind works. This is how you function. Right? It has been working the same way for a long time, and you have been utilizing this process. You have been using this process. Right? That's how you have worked. You have educated yourself, right? So this way we have been functioning, but at a certain point we feel that inner chatter is too bothersome. The inner turmoil is too much. So then we try to find means to get rid of these things, try to quiet our minds, right? But what happens is that when you identify with something that is not yourself, that isn't you, nobody can help you beyond that point. Because these things, you have identified yourself, right? With this inner chatter, with this inner turmoil, you have identified with yourself. So you think that this is you. When that happens, right, nobody can help you. Because it's not the real you. It's not the true you. Now you complain. Now you worry, trying to fight this thing. But with the practice, we try to create some distance. That's the idea of the mindfulness practice. We say, don't take this as you. This inner chatter, this process, don't take it as you. Instead, just try to observe as a third person. That's the idea of the practice. So if you are a newcomer, you might find it really difficult. Although you try, it is really difficult to observe this process at a distance. It is really difficult to observe this process as a third person. Again and again, you get carried away. Again and again, it becomes you. Right? Instead of the observer, the process becomes you.
instead of keeping the distance, you find yourself in the midst of this process. This is happening again and again, especially for a newcomer. But don't worry, with repetitive practice, you can develop this point of view. You need some time, you need repetitive practice. So start with probably like 15-20 minutes of practice. Try to walk in a comfortable manner, try to sit in a comfortable manner, and just observe the process that's happening. Notice how you feel your body. Notice whether the body is breathing. Notice whether you are walking. Right? This way, gradually, you try to develop this point of view. You try to observe this as a third person. That process is gradual. Let's say today, during the mindful walking, you are able to take at least one conscious step. How can I say one conscious steps? How can you know one conscious steps? If you felt the ground touching your feet, if you felt the heel or the toes touching, we can count it as a conscious step, right? So during probably like 10-15 minutes of walking, you were able to at least take few conscious steps, right? So that's the starting point. Those conscious steps, they are a moment of mindfulness. Or they are moments of this third person view, right? So that way, you gradually develop. Start with at least few steps. Then again and again, with repetitive practice, we can develop this ability. Start with observing few breaths. Again and again, with repetitive practice, we can develop this ability. As a newcomer, you have to take it slow. For example, today, there are some people, education department group, so they are probably like 40-50 years old, right? So they can't sit on the ground, they can't sit on the mats, right? They have big bellies and stuff, right? So usually when they sit for like 10-15 minutes, it's like torturous. They can't stay in that posture. They feel it is torturous. So they try to escape. That's how for a beginner, sometimes it's difficult. If your body is not adjusted to these things, it's difficult. If you are not used to sit on the floor, it's difficult. So you have to take it slow. Maybe walking might be a lot easier for many people because it doesn't require sitting. Sitting is difficult, especially difficult, but walking we are used to. After walking for 10-15 minutes, you get exhausted. That's a different matter, but walking meditation would be much easier for a newcomer. So this way, we gradually start our practice. You have to take it slow. 10-15 minutes of walking, 10-15 minutes of sitting as a beginner, then let it go, do your thing. Again, tomorrow also you can practice. So that way, if you improve little by little, then within a month or so, you can comfortably sit for 40 or so minutes. You can comfortably walk for like 1 hour. All right? So that way, you have to gradually develop your practice. You have to take it slow. And when you do like that, with time you realize now you are able to observe this process for a longer periods without getting carried away. You notice that there is this inner chatter. You notice that inner turmoil is there. But among these things, you know that your body is breathing. You know that your body is walking. You know that you are doing your day-to-day things, right? So this way, you can gradually develop your practice, right? When you develop it, what you realize is that this inner chatter is still there. This inner turmoil is still there. But there is a difference. What is the difference? There is distance. There is distance in your mind from this process. There is distance. So when there is distance, it makes a huge difference. I can give you an example. Let's say traffic, right? This traffic analogy is very related. If you are among traffic, then it's so troublesome. Let's say you want to go somewhere, you are late, you get into your car and you drive halfway and get caught in a traffic jam, right? You wait patiently for a few minutes, then you realize it is not moving. Now what happens? You start worrying. You start complaining. You start honking, right? Finally, you start getting out of the car and blaming other people. This is how you react to a traffic jam if you are among this traffic jam. So you see, there is no distance. You are among this traffic jam. Due to that, you are suffering. Okay? But if you have a little distance, let's say somebody is traveling by air with a small airplane, they are traveling and they see this huge traffic jam on the road. Now, for that person, it is not bothersome. It is a fine view he can observe. So many vehicles arranged in a unique pattern. Many, many colors to observe. So this person is watching this traffic jam calmly, and it's just a sight for him. It doesn't bother him. It doesn't create any suffering because he has distance, right? So that's the same thing for a practitioner. If you are not a meditator, you are among the traffic. You don't have distance. Then you start complaining. You start blaming other people. You start fighting. You start honking. So that's natural, right? But imagine having a distance, then you know the traffic is there. You know that these things are happening. You know that the vehicles are not moving. But it doesn't matter anymore because you have a distance, right? So that's the real solution when it comes to dealing with these things. If you try to get rid of them, I don't think that would be successful. Right. If you want to stop this mind, probably you have to stop this body as well. Right. Maybe at the end of your life, you might wonder, the mind might stop. That's not how you should do it. Instead, by creating distance, we are going to solve this problem. If you have no distance, then of course, it's natural that you are in hell. If you have no distance, of course, it's natural that you want to find some means to get rid of these things. But if you have a distance, then it doesn't matter anymore. That's the very idea of the practice. That is the correct way of the practice. Otherwise, many people, in the sake of meditation, they want to get rid of this inner chatter. They have so many complaints about inner chatter. But again and again, we are telling them the correct practice. We have to create some distance. that distance you can't create intentionally. Intentionally you can't do it. Instead, the way is to practice, be mindful, continue with your practice, not just a day, not just a week, not just a month, just as a part of your daily schedule, do some time of practice. Ideally, 40 minutes of sitting, 40 minutes of walking would be nice. That way you do. And you continue for a few months, then you realize now the inner chatter,
but it is not bothering me. Now the turmoil is there, but I don't worry about it much. Right? So that's the real way. That's the real solution. And when you continue this way, with time, you feel much and much more peaceful in your mind.
Incremental levels of peace you start to feel because you have created this last minute to create distance. That's not how you should do it. You have to meditate when you are well. You have to meditate when you are healthy. Before a disaster comes, you have to be prepared. When there's a disaster, you should start meditating. That's not the correct approach. When there is illness, if you try to meditate, if you start meditation, that's not the correct approach. Instead, practice when you are healthy. That very practice will help you when you are sick. Practice when there is no disaster. That very practice will help you when there's a disaster. That's the proper way. For example, let me tell you one story. Now, there's this Jewish person who has been meditating for probably like for some time now. He is in the monastery, he has been meditating, right? So, a few days ago, through some channel, he got to know about the current situation in Israel. Now, within these days, we can feel that he's in hell. The emotions are there, the emotions are so strong, they are taking the control, right? So he's having a really hard time. What to do? He had plans to stay here, probably like few more months. But now the emotions got better of him. Now he's trying to leave. Now he's planning to leave. Those people, they are very concerned about their motherland. So he might be leaving. You can really feel how emotional he is. Over past week or so, I used to work with him during the workout. Heavy duty thing, but still, he can't get any relief. Me anyway, I'm a part of the heavy duty thing because I also need that relief. But he is having trouble because he can't get that relief. His emotions are too strong. He's worrying about his family. He's worrying about his motherland. Right? So that's how the disasters will get us. So if you wait till the disaster to meditate, I don't think that's the real way. I don't think that's the real way. It might be too late. So you have to get prepared when there's no disaster. Because at a time of a disaster, this inner chatter, inner turmoil, it's out of control. It's too powerful, right? So you have to be prepared beforehand. Even sickness, it's the same way. Sickness also the same. If you wait till an illness to meditate, that's not how it is. Instead, you have to get prepared. You have to practice when you are healthy. When there is no pain in your body. And if you continue that way, when there is illness, when there is pain, your practice might help you because your mindfulness is strong. You have created some distance in your mind.
That also, I have a recent example.
Now, this person I know, she got some severe pain in her body, right? So this extreme pain, unbearable. And if you are not ready, then what happens?
If you don't have any distance, what happens? It's natural that your mind might go crazy, right? Inner chatter, inner turmoil, these things,
they become so powerful because this pain is extreme. Right, your mind might suggest, what is this? Am I dying? Doctors can't find it. What should I do?
Right, so this way, again and again, there's this struggle.
But this person, she has been practicing. She is able to stay calm. Even to comfort other family members. They are not in pain, but they are struggling more.
Why?
Because they are not prepared.
Right? Her mother is coming and complaining, if you die, what will happen to these kids?
Right?
So that's sarcastic questions to ask. Question to ask from the person who is having the sickness.
It feels like they asked for it. They signed up for it. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. You have to stay calm and see what this is.
Right?
So, for that, you have to meditate beforehand. So, this person is laughing and saying, I can see how my family members are reacting to this. And I would be in the same group if I haven't done the meditation. Right? I would be also questioning, who would take care of my children? Right? Did I sign up for this? Right? All these questions come. It's natural. That's how our mind works. Right? Even for me, if such a illness comes, the same questioning will be there in my mind. But the difference is that you have to create some distance. You know that this is the stupidity of our mind. Right? You are able to function among these things because you have a distance. If you don't have a distance, then you always get carried away with these thought processes. Especially at a time of difficulty, they become really powerful. They take control. That's why in our poster we mentioned, it's like an possessing entity. Right? It is so powerful. It takes control. And you identify with this possessing entity. You think that this possessing entity is your reality. That is the issue. That is the problem. When you have no distance, you identify with it. You think that this is your reality. If this is your reality, what else you could do? Right? If this is your reality, it feels like there is no solution. If this is your reality, maybe drugs doesn't seem so bad. But if you have some distance, you know that this is only some part of our mind. Because of the distance, you can know. Because of that ability, you can know. Otherwise, you get overwhelmed by these things. When the sickness comes, you get overwhelmed. When disaster comes, you get overwhelmed. When death comes, you get overwhelmed. Right? So you have to create this distance beforehand. Some people, they say distance, distance. Some people, they say let go, let go. But that's not how it works. You have to spend some time. You have to do your homework. Continue with the practice. And as a result only, the distance will appear. You can't just
imagine having distance. You can just ask for it. Instead, it is a hard-earned distance. You have to earn it, right? It's something worth earning. That's the valuable thing, because otherwise we'll be in the same trouble again and again. We'll be facing the same trouble again and again. We take this possessing entity to be ourselves, right? So that's the idea of the practice. That's the real solution. That's the real solution to whatever the problems that you are having in your life. This is the solution. When your mind is not mindful, it has no distance. When your mind is lost, it doesn't know its boundaries, right? Again and again, we get carried away. Again and again, we make mistakes. That's why even some people, they don't even accept what they have done. Some people, they make us doubt our own reality, because they become victim to this possessing entity. That's why. When I talk to some people, I feel like they are doubting their own reality. They say that this hasn't happened. They say, I didn't say this. Right? They argue. They bet their life on it. Right? So that's how it is. Because you become victim to this possessing entity. You become victim to this inner chatter. You become victim to these voices. The meditator knows that this is just a part. The meditator knows this is the nature of our mind. The meditator acknowledges, but he doesn't get carried away with it. That's the very idea of the practice. Don't try to get rid of these things. These things, this is how the mind functions. You can't stop the mind. You can't quiet the mind for a long period. Instead, just create some distance will help you. That distance will save you. So this way we have to continue. This way we have to develop our own practice.
So that's the main idea I want to give. And when you practice on your own, you can develop. Namanta, can you hear?
Yes, Bandhi, I can hear.
Okay, I had a small bubble with the connection. You can develop your own ability. It comes with the repetitive practice. Now,
probably like, I don't know, 1 week ago, I introduced this very practice to some group, right? Among them, they were newcomers to the practice. They were new and they did the practice, did the walking, did the sitting, and it was more like a friendly discussion.
And towards the end of the program, we shared our experience, right? They talked about mindful walking and how they felt it. They talked about mindful sitting and how they felt it. So that way they shared. And I gave them some advice and how to continue their practice. Among this group, there was a girl, probably like 14 years old or so, young girl was there.
And she also shared her own experience, right?
So these are newcomers. And when I was about to finish the discussion, she got up and asked me, respectfully, she asked me to share my own experience about the walking and sitting practice. So that was her request, right? So when you think about it, it's a very valuable approach towards the life, right? Because we are practitioners. We are part of this same process. So when you do this practice, you have to develop your own confidence. You can't have blind faith. Instead, you have to develop your own confidence. You have to develop your own practice. That is the true way. Otherwise, you are always dependent on somebody else. You have a dependency. Initially, of course, you can have, but with time, you have to develop your own ability. You have to develop your own practice. That's why, especially when we give advice, we allow some space for you to experiment. We don't draw the line. If we draw the line, we draw a dot line, not a finished line, right? Because that's how the practice works. In Zen, they have this symbol. It's called incomplete circle of Zen, right? They have some other name as well, I can't remember. Incomplete circle of Zen, right? So the practice is also the same. It's open in one side. The circle is open, right? The ends are not met. Similarly, the practice is also open, right? We give some guidance. We give you a dotted line. You have to find out the proper way. You have to experiment and you have to know what the true practice is. Especially, let's say, today I gave you instructions, brief instructions about walking. Usually when I give instructions, I don't give them in much detail. I try to keep more quiet time, right? So that way, when you get some instructions and you know, when you walk, then you have your own experience. Let's say if you are sharing your experience today, if you heard my instructions, then you did your practice. So what you are sharing after the practice would be your own experience. So you can see you heard my words, then you practiced. When you practiced, there you have evolved. Now what you are sharing is no longer the words I mentioned. Instead, it has already evolved. Okay, that's the very idea of the practice. Some people, they ask, define mindfulness.
Okay, that's their question.
Frequent questions we get. Define mindfulness. Or what is mindfulness?
Okay, but if you give a definition,
then it must be fixed.
But practice, it's totally different. Mindfulness, it has different layers. Okay, we say bear attention. That's more like introductory level of mindfulness. And when you introduce mindfulness to somebody, we say bear attention or just sitting, just walking, right? Shikantaza. We give them those instructions. But when they do it, they notice when they pay bear attention, when they give bear attention, they feel the breath. They say, okay, I felt breath. Now when you feel breath, it is no more the bear attention. It has already evolved. It has already evolved. So that's how the process is. That's how the process is. Now, yesterday, somebody was asking about, this mindfulness practice. You say you have different levels. So he is asking about those levels. How can I be mindful of my thoughts? How can I be mindful of my bodily sensations? How can I be mindful of my
feelings? So he is asking, right?
So when you practice, can you separate these things? Can you just take a single part and do that practice? That's not how it works. How can you feel your body without feeling? Can you feel just the physical part of your body without feeling? Can you feel it without mind, without consciousness?
You can't. This entire thing, it's mixed. It's the single package, right?
So at times the body becomes prominent, of course. At times the feeling becomes prominent, of course. At times the thought processes become prominent, of course.
But underneath you have all these different layers. No matter single thing become prominent,
underneath everything is there. The rest is there.
That's how the practice is. If you try to separate them,
then you are in trouble, right? So all these questions, they come
because of the lack of practice. They haven't practiced enough. That's why they have so many questions. If they have practiced enough, they know that this question is not valid. Some people, they try to do only samatha meditation, concentration. Some people, they want to do only insight meditation. So they ask how to do concentration only. But can you do concentration only? You have these different practices. Concentration without concentration can be mind.
Can you observe your breath?
No, these are supporting faculties. When you're mindful, it is supporting the concentration. When the concentration is improved, it is supporting your mindfulness. These are supporting faculties. So when you try to take one out, then that spoils your own practice. So what you have to do is that just stop the talking, stop the questioning, stop the doubting, and just continue with the practice. Do your walking, do your sitting, come up with a report, share your experience. When you share, we would know, okay, this is how you have practiced. Then we can say, okay, try and experiment like this, try and continue like this. Then you do your own, probably like few days, few weeks of practice. Then again, you come back and share your experience. So this is how you have to develop your own confidence. Otherwise, you will be always dependent on somebody else. You'll have dependency for life, right? But that's not how it should work. You have to develop your own confidence. And when you have that confidence only, you can face these difficult situations, especially when you are sick, especially when there are disasters in your life, these things, this inner turmoil, these thought processes, inner chatter, they become so powerful. And when that happens, nobody is there to help you. So you have to manage your own thing, right? So gradually develop this ability, gradually develop your confidence with repetitive practice. And if you have that confidence, if you know your own practice, then you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to depend on somebody else. That's the proper way. That's why all the time when we give instructions, we give some guideline, we ask you to practice. We ask you to share your own experience. When you share your own experience also, you realize that no answers are given. Maybe vague answers are given, no definite answers are given. Again, we ask you to experiment. We ask you to come up with your own solution, come up with your own experience. So that's how we have to progress in the practice. When I see signs of confidence in your practice, it's something very nice, especially that girl I mentioned. She did the practice for the first time. And after doing it, she was asking a question which shows her own confidence in the practice, right? So that way we invite you to practice and try to develop this ability, this distance in your mind. This distance will help you either with inner chatter, inner turmoil, when you are sick, when you face a disaster, whatever it is, when you face death, right? This distance will help you
because now you have strength of the practice. Now you are observing from a distance. You are not among these things. That distance will create a huge difference, huge impact in your mind. Thank you for listening. We invite you to continue with your own practice.
Thank you very much, Bhante, and much thanks to Bhante. That was a very detailed and in-depth account of how why the practice is advised in this particular format, in instead of on a track of a dotted line rather than complete line. So next up, we have the question and answer session coming up, and we would I would like to invite Sonali to commence the session, and I would share the screen for the beginner's introduction. Thank you, Sonali.
Thank you, Namantha. Thank you, Bhante. For any beginners that are starting today or anyone who needs a little refresher, Nisarana Vanaya has given us some guidance on how to do mindful walking and mindful sitting. As it shows on the slide here, the two links to the videos that they have provided are given here. Once you watch them, we recommend you that you start with any amount of time, with a small amount of time, and then gradually progress to an hour of each type of meditation. The links to these have now been shared on the chat. And once you have experienced, we'd like to hear from you your experience of that week. We have two ways of reporting it to us. It's via the email, which is beginnersnv@gmail.com, or the Google form. The link is given here. We will also share these on the chat. And you could write to us. We will then present it to Bhante for his feedback and guidance. And in here, as it says, the practice recordings can also be found on these links given as well. So for this week, we have two reports. As we said, we have received two reports from people. We will share them with Bhante and ask for his guidance. The first report, mindful sitting. Sat on the cushion and adjusted the posture into a comfortable position. Relief was felt in the mind due to returning to the formal practice after a gap of 2 weeks. In a short while, the attention moved to the breath, which was prominent. A stream of jumbled thoughts arose next. There was no excitement, no resistance in the mind about the thoughts. The practice has helped see the rising and passing away of thoughts, feelings, sensations, etc. The attention moved between breath and sensations in the body, especially the sensation of pins and needles at the fingertips, around cheeks and at the chin. Noted the arising and subsiding of this sensation for a while. Sat for 40 minutes. Mindfulness during the day. What were the lessons from last week? Learned the importance of letting things be, especially when the mundane mind wanted to meddle with things and others. Also learned the importance of taking a break from time to time. Both those were lessons from mistakes. On Friday, there was an odd experience. For no apparent reason, there was a lot of anger arising. When it couldn't be ignored, took a moment to check the source of it, but couldn't outwardly. Everything seemed to be fine, except for the anger bubbling. Noted how the stomach was in knots and felt heat in the chest area. It was so odd because I didn't understand the cause. Continued with work and chores and suddenly realized how tired the body and mind both were. Going to work in the latter half of Friday, found out one of the train lines to work was suspended. Anger increased. Almost immediately recognized that the train company hadn't given anyone a guarantee that they will always run on time and that they won't ever be suspended. With that, the humor arose. This was the point when the knots in the stomach started to relax, and after choosing to walk along a route to another station to take a different train line, a sense of ease noted. Heat had subsided in the chest too. Although there was some concern of being late for work, mind was ready to accept the possibility of arriving late. Peaceful moment experienced with that acceptance. Dear Bhante, look forward to your feedback. Much merit to you and the organizers. That's the end of report, Bhante.
If you move to Sri Lanka, then you won't have that problem because the trains are always late. You don't have to worry about, you know, guarantee from a train company. Yeah, so that's how our mind is. And I would like to point out that lot of anger arising with no apparent reason, right? So this is a valuable observation. Now, yesterday we had a discussion with some group, and somebody was saying that lot of greed arising for no apparent reason, right? So these things, this is how the mind works. Now, usually we try to find, we think that there is a reason behind anger. We think that there is a reason behind greed. We think there is a reason behind melancholy, right? So when we face these emotions, we think that there is a reason. But that's a false belief, right? We think that there is a reason behind these thought processes. Meditators, they usually come and complain, I can't find a reason behind this thought process. Right? Now you are saying you can't find a reason behind this emotion. So that gives us an idea that we have a belief that there should be a reasoning, or there is a reasoning. That belief is in us, right? So the meditator, they come to realize that the thoughts are there, but there is no reasoning. The emotions are there, but there is no reasoning, right? That's the very realization that we are after. We try to experience that these thought processes, it has no reason, no apparent reason is there. Sometimes a reason is shown, but that's not the real reason. These processes are so misleading, we think that there is anger, there should be a reasoning. Right? But the meditator, they get to know that there is no real reasoning, no apparent reasoning. It could have some past causes. That's a different matter. No apparent logical reasoning is there. That's a false belief. We think that there is a reasoning. There is a logical reasoning. It must be there. Now, yesterday or day before yesterday, somebody came and, you know, complained about something huge, right? A big complaint. Okay. Then after complaining, started with caring about somebody else, caring about something, right? That's how the complaint started. Okay. Then towards the end of it, the real reasoning appeared. What was the real reasoning? He had a trouble, or she had a trouble, right? So you see how it comes. It was a huge complaint. And when you dig deep into it, the center was that complaining person, the ego, right? Because I got hurt. I got hurt, so I don't like this entire thing. I don't like this person. I don't like this incident. So that's how our mind works. We think we are trying to do good to other people. We think we are trying to solve a problem. We think that we are supporting some special mission or something, right? But when it comes to real reasoning, you have a false belief in you. False belief
of ego.
Right? You believe in something that isn't there. That's the issue. Right? That's why you think that there should be a reasoning, a logical reasoning behind these thought processes. A false belief. That's why you think that there should be a logical reasoning behind these emotions. False belief. Right? Because you believe that there's this ego, there's this center. Around that center, the entire universe rotates. Right? But more and more you meditate, you realize, I am not the center. Initially, you start to see, you know, one or two foreign objects, right? Seems like they are rotating and having their own center. That's how you feel, right? Feels like my gravitational field is not applicable for these objects, right? That's how you start to see this process. You come and complain, okay, I see these objects. Seems like my gravity is not applicable, right? But more you meditate, more you realize I am not the center. I too am rotating, centering something else. That something else is also rotating, centering some other thing. That some other thing is also rotating, centering some huge another thing, right? So that's how it is. That's how it is. We had this false belief. More you meditate, you realize the emotions are there, but there is no logical reasoning. The thought processes are there, but there is no logical reasoning. Okay, that very realization is what we need. Okay, so sometimes there might be apparent some kind of a reasoning, but if you dig deep, that too is not the reasoning. Instead, you have a false belief of this ego. That's why you come with huge complaints, trying to solve problems, trying to solve the world. And if you dig deep, then you find the ego is the problem. Your own ego is the problem. That's a false belief. So in a way, the more you meditate, you get rid of this false belief. So next time also, the emotions might come. Sometimes there'll be apparent reasoning. Sometimes there won't be. Right? But whatever happens, know that this thing, the entire thing is a false belief. We believe that there should be a reasoning. There is a reasoning. We believe that there is this ego. Right? Based on that false belief, this everything is happening. So again and again observe, feel the emotion. That's what I have to say. For the sake of the practice, feel the emotion. Now that Jewish person, he's coming and saying, I feel so much pain, so many emotions. I am overwhelmed by them. He's saying, I am trying to avoid them. But it is not the way of the practice. And so I told him, feel the emotions, feel the pain. Let the pain be felt. What else you can do? That's the real practice. So when the anger comes, just be angry. Be angry. You realize with time, it passes. It releases its grip. Anger is more like a grip. You also mentioned it in your report. So with time, it will release. When the causes are no more, it will naturally release. You can't force it out. You won't be able to force it out. Sometimes you temporarily can force it out, but again, some other form, it will appear, right? So what you can do is that just feel the emotion, let the emotion be felt, feel the grip it is having. When the causes are no longer, it will release its own grip. So that way you have to continue your practice. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Bhante. Very relevant for most of us. I will move on to the next one. Sitting meditation. Aware of sitting position, back straight, hands on lap, mind noting breath which change from equal in and out breaths to nearly imperceptible breaths imperceptible breaths. Mind calm, image of contraction of face to a smaller size noted. And breathing continuing. Noises not distracting. Occasional thoughts distracting. Meditated for 45 minutes. Mindfulness in the day. Noted hardness of steering wheel when driving and coolness on the arm. Noted seating position and aware of beginning and end of each movement when pressing foot and accelerator. Noted the greed in mind wanting ice cream and chocolate another time. Aware that if desire fulfilled, the happiness that it gained is temporary, but despite it, had the ice cream. Aware when irritation arising and associated impatience, both passing quickly. End of much merit to Pantheon organizers. End of report.
Okay, I like that approach much better. Right. Namanta. Sonali, can you hear? I'm having trouble. Not sure.
Yes, Pante, we can hear.
Okay, I like that approach much better because, you know, you don't have to always prevent your mind from having a small ice cream. Okay. So greed is there. The mind is asking for it. Okay, give the ice cream and see. Soon you realize after a while, again, the same process,
right? So meditators, they torture themselves. They are not wise. We can complain. We can say they are not wise, right? They torture themselves trying to prevent everything.
When you try to control everything, when you try to micromanage everything, that's not a good sign.
That's a sign of stress, right?
Instead, you have to take a wise approach. You have so many things. You have big things
that you need to take care of, right? If your mind is following those things, it's okay to give ice cream once in a while,
right? So that way,
you have to, in a way, you are compassionate towards oneself. The practitioners, they don't have it. They torture themselves because in the name of the practice, for the sake of the practice, they do. But if you are a long-term practitioner, you have to understand, you have to be wise. You have to be skillful. Otherwise, you are torturing yourself. You can't continue for a long period. So gradually, we continue with the practice once in a while. Ice cream is fine. Okay. Give and see. Instead of one, give it two. Okay, try and see. When you give it two, it might get sick of it. Next time, get it three, right? So this is how the mind works. It's an experiment. Again and again, we are trying with it, experimenting with it. When you do experiment with it, you realize you become more and more skillful dealing with this thing. Right, it's more like a monkey mind. You can't torture it. Torturing or just by torturing it won't do. Instead, you have to be skillful. You know when to torture, you know when to relax, right? So that's how the proper approach should be. Okay, especially when it comes to me, I am also the same type. No, I'm not so much torturous type, right? So it's okay to have an ice cream once in a while. It's okay to, you know, enjoy once in a while. That will allow you to go a real distance with the practice. Otherwise, we have seen so many people, they start with so much energy, but they torture themselves.
For the sake of the practice, they do it. That's the issue. For the sake of the meditation, they do it. And within few months, few years, they end somehow.
Maybe they go for some other practice.
Again, start the torturing process from the beginning. Okay. Maybe they give up meditation. Maybe they start pleasure seeking. All these things come because we are not wise.
We are not skillful, right?
The proper way is that you have to be skillful. It's not done within a day. It's not done within a month. Instead, you have to continue years and years.
Buddha says 7 years, right? But what else you can do? Let's say after the 7 years, what else is there for you to do? So as long as you live, just continue with the meditation, right? Meditate, you realize, you become peaceful. Even today, somebody was mentioning, after a long time, did the formal meditation, and it felt
relaxed.
You felt relieved to do the formal meditation.
Okay? So that's how it is. Even after becoming the Buddha, He meditated. What else to do? Just continue with your practice while doing your thing. Okay? So as long as you live, you can meditate. In a way, meditation is living.
Truly living. Not postponing.
Instead, living. Usually we do
postpone as living. We try to live in a future day. We live tomorrow. We live in yesterday. That's how it is. Right? While this present moment is happening, you do think about the tomorrow.
You do think about yesterday. But when you know meditation, it's an invitation for you to live. Your life happens in the present moment. So it's
an invitation for you to live more. Okay, so that's the proper approach. Just continue with the practice for a long time. And you realize more you practice,
better you become, more skillful you become,
and incremental levels of peace you feel within. That's the idea I want to give. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Bhante. That's all the reports we have received for today. Thank you for the people who wrote reports, because we can all relate to some of these situations. And we can all take a lot of advice from Bhante's feedback as well. So thank you for that. We now have some time for questions from everyone. If you've got any questions, please raise your Zoom hand or let us know in the chat section. We will then ask that question from Bhante. There is one raised hand. Do you like to unmute and ask your question?
Hello, Bhante Avsarai. Bhante, the gap that you mentioned, the lack of inner chatter, I do experience that in the practice. There are long gaps of no thoughts, and then thoughts arise. Then I watch it with awareness. But Bhante, can you give an advice to someone? When you know that there is no ego, can you actually give an advice to someone? Because I did yesterday, and then I was questioning whether I did the right thing. And the inner chatter did begin. But I knew that there was no ego. So can you give that advice when you are in the gap? Is my question, Bhante, please.
Okay, so the first part is that in the talk, I mentioned about a distance. You are correct there. There is longer periods of silence in between.
But what I was focusing there was the distance, right? The
inner chatter is there, but there's a distance.
You feel it
from far away, like that traffic
analogy we got,
right? You are not among traffic. You have a distance. When you have a distance, it doesn't bother you anymore. Or it doesn't bother you so much,
right? So inner chatter could be there, but you don't
worry about it. It doesn't bother you so much
because there is a distance.
And as you mentioned, some longer and longer periods of quietness will appear in your mind. That too is true. Okay, with repetitive practice, with strong mindfulness, you realize longer and longer periods of quietness.
Okay, so that is also there. And when it comes to the question, right, it's your own mind that is suggesting
that there is no
ego. It's your own ego that is suggesting that there is no ego. So you have to understand the sarcasm behind this mind processes, right?
This is how our mind works. It will come and say, okay, I am in the emptiness, or I am in the gap, so there is no ego. And the Buddha says, even in emptiness,
you are suggesting that there is no ego, the same ego that's at work, right? So although your mind is at emptiness, still the ego is there. Still the ego is there. That's the irony behind this, right? It comes now
wearing the clothes of practice, wearing the robes of practice, the ego. More dangerous. Now you can't see it. Earlier you know, okay, this is lust, you know it's ego. This is anger, you know it's ego, right? This is jealousy, you know it's ego. Much easier to identify.
But when it comes wearing robes of practice, then it's much more dangerous, much difficult. Okay, so that's how the ego works. It has many layers. It has, different outfits. Okay, especially when you start the practice, those things start to come. But what's the way? We have to face these things. We have to have this discussion, right? We have to approach it differently. That is how it is. Although
you are in the emptiness, still the ego is the same. Still the ego is there. That's why in certain teachings, Buddha says about other practitioners. He says that there are 62 wrong views. 62 wrong views. 18 based on the past, 44 based on the future, right? And he says, these views, they are not for the worldly. You are a pleasure seeker, and you don't have issues, right? These views, the people who are caught, they are practitioners, right? Because of the practice, they have created these wrong views. And he's saying one way of a wrong view is that this emptiness, there's no ego, right? That's a one form of wrong view. That too
is ego. That too is ego,
right? So how to get rid of it, right? What's the way? The meditator, they'll see how my mind is liking the emptiness or the gap. Right, then how my mind is resisting coming out of the gap, how my mind is liking the quietness, how my mind is resisting the chaos, right? So this process, you have to allow it to happen 1001 times. When it happens, you realize gradually the liking and disliking, it fades away. That's how you can really get rid of your ego. Otherwise, the earlier yogis, the yogis before Buddha, they went into this emptiness, right? But they didn't become enlightened because they still had the ego. And that's the more dangerous level of ego because it's in emptiness now, right? It's wearing the robes of practice. It's saying that I am a sage, kind of a thing, right? So much more dangerous. Easier to teach people who are, pleasure seeking, because they don't know anything. But when that level happens, it's really difficult. So we have to be careful not to get caught in those traps.
The way is the same. We have to experience it. We have to face it. We have to see how it is deceiving us again and again, right? No matter you go to the emptiness, still the ego is there. It shows by the liking and disliking, right? So continue with your practice. Face
these difficulties, and with time, you realize that liking and disliking will fade away. That very fading is what we are after. For that, it takes a long time. You have to keep on practicing for a long time.
So, Bhante, what you are saying is we can't really give an advice to anyone.
Forget about advising other people, right? These days, I too am trying to advise myself. Instead of advising other people, I try to say, am I, you know, like walking the talk? That's the question I'm asking. But from me, right? Of course, we can share our experience. Of course, we can wish all the best for other people, right? If they ask or if there's an opportunity, we can share our own thing. But how can we decide what's good for other person if we don't know what's good for us, right? For oneself, forget about plural. How can I know what is good for somebody else if I don't know what's good for me? Okay, so that's the very idea of the practice. But that doesn't prevent us from sharing it with other people, right? Otherwise, we can't have this discussion, this program. Okay, you have to finish your practice before you start telling other people. That's not how it works. You can work with other people. You can tell them that there is a way, there is a practice. Try to do it on your own. And this is how you do it, right? Go teach somebody. That's fine. You have a classroom full of kids. Teach them mindfulness, right? And see how they experience the practice. It's an ongoing process. You can advise. They'll come and blame you. Okay, that's a lesson. You can advise. They'll come and praise you. That's a lesson. You can keep quiet and they'll come and blame you for not advising. That's a lesson, right? You can keep quiet. They'll come and blame you for something else. That's a lesson, right? So this is how the practice works. There are no right and wrong answers. Always it's an experiment. By advising, you learn. By not advising, you learn. Okay? By teaching other people, you learn. By refraining from teaching, also you learn. Okay? It's an ongoing process. So go and advise people. That's fine. After a while, you get sick of it. Then stay quiet for a while. Again, the ego will say, let's go and advise more people. It's an ongoing process. Enjoy the journey.
Thank you, Bhante.
Thank you, Bhante. And thank you for everyone who's asking these questions as well, because we all benefit from the answers. I have one question that has come on the chat directly to me. So I will put it to you, Bhante. They're not sure if this is the right place to ask this question, but what is the difference between Pancha Indriya and Pancha Bala is the question.
Okay, so probably not the right place to ask in those terms. But of course, if you talk about the practice, earlier in the talk, I discussed about different levels of mindfulness. Okay, so you are talking about deep levels or layers of mindfulness, right? So before you go into Indriya faculty level or Bala level, right, you have to start with their attention. Okay, because these things, they are more like experienced, not felt. Sorry, they are more like experienced, not explained. Okay, so you can really explain these things. Instead, these levels are experienced. So first start with pay attention. Walk mindfully and pay attention. Sit mindfully and pay attention. If you come back next time and tell us, okay, I walked, I sat, and this is what I felt. I felt breath. I felt the feet. Okay, so that's the approach. That's the approach. Then it's no longer pay attention. When you say you felt breath, it's gone into a different level or layer of mindfulness. Okay.
then we can say, okay, now you have moved beyond the pay attention. Continue for few breaths. Continue for few steps. That way we say. Then sometimes you might come and say, okay, I had thought in between, but I was able to bring my attention back to the breathing or back to the walking. Okay. Then it's a totally different level of skill or mindfulness.
So you can see how it is progressing. How it is progressing.
I have this analogy of, you know, riding a push bicycle, right?
When you start, let's say a little kid, when they start riding, right? They have training wheels, right? Because this kid is new and he can't balance, he or she can't balance himself, right?
So you have training wheels. With the training wheels, you start riding the bike. Then what happens after some time when you are able to balance somewhat? You remove one training wheel, not
both the training wheels, then that one training wheel will be removed.
Then you do it
for some time. Then again, you remove the other training wheel. Now only it's a bicycle. Okay? Now you know how to balance. You do. You train for years and years. And one day, you are able to ride this bike without holding the handle.
Your balance, your skill is
that much. Now you don't need to
hold the handle. It goes, right? And now it's more like, you know, circus, right? But it's possible. So what we do is that without even touching a bike, we come and ask about how to ride a bike without touching the handle. How to do this circus thing with the bicycle, right? So what to say?
So you have to start, touch the bike first. Go and touch the bike. That is the very starting point. So that's the bare attention. That's the bare attention, right? When you practice for a while, then you realize, okay, these things you can't really explain. Instead, they are felt. They are experienced. Okay? So that's the answer.
Thank you, Bhante. I hope that answers your question, the person who sent it to me. I think we have now run out of time, so I will have to hand back to Naumanta to end the session. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you very much, Merit Sonali. Greatly appreciated. And also thank you to all the persons who sent reports and raised the verbal question. And I would like to wrap up the program. We are over time, kind of. So I would like to associate all the merits generated on this session to Venerable Bhante and wish that his own practice improves further. And we can notice that his advice is deepening and we are benefiting from his own practice being improved as well. So that's a great thing. So wish all practice improvements will come Bhante's way. And then I would like to also associate merit with the Chief Abbot of the Nisarana Forest Monastery, Most Venerable Bhante Udayiregama Dhammajiva Mahathero, who's insightfully requested this program to be realized in this format and manner. And I would also like to share merits with all the wonderful organizers on this program who are working hard behind the scenes to run the program this way. And also all of you who are joining the session provide the backbone for and the justification for this session to run. Thank you for joining our session, and I hope that these merits are allow you to improve your own practices as well. So the program will run again next Saturday, same time, and I would like to wish you all a happy and mindful week ahead and hope to see you next week. Thank you very much. I would end the session now.